Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
y'all already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Angie Martinez in Real Life Podcast.
This episode and conversation is powered by Duce.
Ryan, I think my crew might be a little under pressure today because you're my guest. I think my crew might feel a little under pressure today because you're my guest.
Why that?
Because you're my first filmmaker on the
that
pod. First filmmaker.
That is true.
Y'all good, man. I'm on strike.
I've had actors, athletes, rappers.
Great job.
Thanks, man. Ryan Coogler, everybody. I mean, does this weird you out a little bit?
What's that?
The other side of the camera? This side?
If I was like supposed to act or something, it'd be good.
You can't act at all?
I mean,
you could. Never tried?
I don't think so.
Never even tempted to try?
I was like in school or something, like, yeah. But like in film school, they make you do it.
Oh, you're probably pretty good.
Wait for me.
Because I feel like truth tellers make really good actors. Like if you could be in truth all the time. I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, not just
that. No, I'm just thinking about it.
Because if you are in a state of truth all the time, then you are, whatever line it is, you are delivering it truthfully.
Right.
That would make you a good actor, I think.
Shit, maybe.
What does make a good actor? Do you know? You should know.
I think like the ability to like trigger empathy, like curiosity. And then there's a technical thing to them too. Like a lot of the real dope ones like was trained. You know, they got like a lot of techniques.
So I'm so excited you're here. Number one, I'm a fan.
Man, what?
I am a fan. I've been a fan.
And likewise.
So it's funny that Fruitville is coming on. It's 10 years, right? You just hit 10-year anniversary of Fruitville?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
I remember watching that movie and thinking to myself, who made this?
Wow, really?
Like, I remember thinking to myself, who made this? Wow. And because it was so, I don't know, it was so specific and so honest. And so, I don't know, I was so drawn to it and I was really curious about who made it.
That's kind of you to say that.
I'm sure people have told you that.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's been a while since talking about that movie, and it feels like yesterday when we made it, but at the same time, it felt like it was a long, long time ago because a lot's happened since.
A lot.
Yeah, I couldn't make that movie today. I don't think like just because I was like 25, 26, naive, was really making it, thinking that it would keep things like that from happening again. You know what I'm, you know, and what happened after it came out was, you know, more videos.
You believe you could change the world with one story?
I think not change it, but I believe, you know, like maybe
impact.
Maybe an outside impact.
Mm-hmm. Do you not feel like it did?
I definitely didn't after I made it, because like when the movie came out, the George Zimmerman verdict came down. You know, like I think the weekend we released it, so we were doing press while that news was breaking.
Oof.
You know. And, you know, in a year since, you know, if you put yourself in that mindset, it's not like all this film did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, getting older and learning more about the world and, you know, more about the things in society that affect you, you know, emotionally. I think I got more perspective. So I'm able to, like, you know, have a healthier existence as it relates to it.
I do want to talk today about the 10 years because 10 years from then to now, the lessons you've learned and the, you know, you've been privy to, I'm sure is amazing. But first, I think, you know, just thinking about you and why I'm such a fan, aside from just the actual work, it's like, I feel like you move with integrity, with the choices that you make and the films that you make and watching you do interviews. And
I mean, I try, man. I'm like everybody else, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to move honest and do right by people and do what I say I'm going to do kind of thing, you know what I'm saying? But it's really just being where I'm from. Like,
yeah,
I found that you know, it's beneficial to move like that.
I was watching the speech that you gave. It was about BAFTA.
Oh, BAFTA.
The BAFTA speech.
Yeah.
And you started it like, it was beautiful. Stop.
Oh, right on.
You were like, you started by saying, I'm really nervous and I'm going to need to take a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'm a bit nervous. Y'all bear with me. I might take some extended pauses to collect myself, do the nerves and... natural fear of public speaking.
You saying out loud, yo, I'm nervous, y'all. I'm not. It's like you let it go. It's like,
yeah.
It's like, I feel like when people hold on to things that are not true, imagine you didn't say that at the beginning of that speech.
Oh, I see what you mean.
It's like you release it by letting the truth out.
Yeah. Letting folks in on what's happening.
Yeah. Even if it's uncomfortable, you get it out or whatever.
You know, that's.
And so I think there's a lesson in that for people just in terms of like what we hold on to and just getting it out. And
yeah.
I was thinking about I don't know why. Sometimes somebody else does it bring up something for me.
Yeah.
In the middle of my radio career, my dream interview was always Oprah Winfrey, right? Because I'm an Oprah baby. I grew up on Oprah and my purpose.
Yeah,
and I
wanted to,
you know what I'm saying? You get it. Obviously, I'm an Oprah baby, right? So I always was like, this is my dream. I interviewed Jay-Z 100 times. This, you know, Biggie, Pac. I done interviewed everybody. Oprah Winfrey was on my list. I'm driving to work one day. I'm in the car. We had just some competition. I had just come on the radio. They put Ed Lover on against me in afternoon drive. I'm on my way to work, feeling good about my day. I click to see what the competitor's doing. Ed Lover is on the radio. And he has a very special guest today. Stopping everything. He has Oprah Winfrey in the building.
Right.
Now I'm driving to work and I want to cry.
Right.
Because I'm like, what? This was supposed to be my, I worked 20 years to get this interview. Why would they take her down there? He just got on the radio down there.
Yeah.
So I'm having all those feelings. And then I'm like, everybody I work with knows that Oprah is my, and they know she's on the other station right now. So now I have to walk in the building and see everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm like, fuck, what am I going to front? Am I going to walk in there like, I don't care?
Yeah.
I could. Yeah. I could probably pull it off. I'm good enough to maybe pull it off.
Yeah.
But really, could I pull it off? I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know what? So before I went upstairs, I called Ed Lover. And I had texted him.
Yeah.
And I told him that I was like, you got my dream interview, but you're killing it. Congratulations. Amazing job. Like, let it go.
Yeah. That's super mature.
Yes. Yeah. And I was younger. I was probably, a long time ago, right? So I was younger, but I learned something about myself in that moment. And I've always thought about that. Like, if you let it go, even if it's an uncomfortable, whether it's jealousy, envy, nervousness, insecurity, all that shit.
Yeah.
If you let it go, the power has less power. It's like.
So true.
Right? So it's the same thing. I don't know why. When I saw you do that, it reminded me of that moment. I was like, damn, that's just a moment for me, a story to like realize that. So then I walked in and I was like, it's fine. Because I was really fine.
Yeah.
Because Ed hit me back and was like, yo, thank you. You know how much that means to me. Coming from you.
That's beautiful.
It was beautiful. It turned into like I was a mess to like, it was like a dope moment where he was like, man, coming from you, that means everything. Thank you so much.
That's huge.
So then I walk into work. I'm fine.
It's amazing.
Right, because I had to let that shit go.
When was this? That this happened?
This was, I don't know, 20 years ago? So like a long time ago.
That's fucking like incredible because you was, it's like a story of emotional maturity and wisdom.
Yeah.
Like radical self-care. You know what I'm saying?
Like, and it's like when you have a moment where you teach yourself something. I was like, oh, I mean, shit, I feel better.
It's like a survival tactic. Yeah, yeah. Like, because you something that you loved, like, that's a recipe for a lot of internalized negativity. Like, it's a recipe for envy. It's a recipe for, you know, you might have went in there and lashed out at somebody in the office. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Or lashed out at yourself. But, man, you took that, acknowledged it, congratulated the person who was your competition, building, like, made them feel
seen,
but also like appreciated by a peer. You know what I'm saying?
He really
like,
did do a good job. He was great. It was a great interview. I couldn't even front.
He was being honest. You know what I'm saying? Like acknowledging that it was a dream of yours, putting it all in the, like, that's incredible. Like, that's why I was asking when it happened, because that's like, I deal with that, man. Like coming up, I grew up as an athlete. Right before I wanted to be a filmmaker, and like I would play, it didn't happen too often, thankfully. Like, once in a while, you come across somebody who is better than you. You know, you know what I'm saying?
How you handle that?
Well, you know, when I played football, I would handle it by acknowledging it first, like, mentally. Like, a good example is, like, I played Marshawn Lynch a bunch. Like, you know, in Pop Warner in high school, college.
Oh, you had a good class.
Yeah, but he was really, 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 really good in high school. And I remember at some point in the, during the game, it's like, yo, this dude's incredible. We gotta figure out how to tackle him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so we in the huddle, like, you know, figuring out, all right, you grab one leg, I grab this leg. You gotta do it. You know, but before you even get to that point, is you gotta realize, like, this person is exceptional at this, and we gotta switch tactics. You know what I'm saying? And just that realization is scary. You know, and you feel it. Like, so by the time I was in film school, I learned to, like, if I got the feeling like somebody's, that feeling Marshawn gave me when I was playing against him. But artistically, like, I'll meet another student. It's like, oh, this person is better than me at this thing or further along. And I get that feeling. I'll run towards you. You know, I'll try to, try to befriend the person and be around them and see what I can learn. You know what I'm saying? See if we could collaborate, as opposed to like being like, man, I don't want
to. But did you have to learn how to do that?
I think sports taught me, you know, like, life kind of taught me before I got to grad school. So I was already in the zone there, you know.
Do you see people? Do you look at other directors or other people now and think and have those feelings? Like,
all the time.
Really?
Yeah, all the time, man. Like that's when I know. That's when I know something's good. If I get that feeling again, like, you know, like you know, oh man, I gotta compete with this. This is, I don't know if I can. Holy shit! You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Yeah.
You know, but what's great is in, and what I do now, it's not really competition. It's not really competitive. Like. Mm-hmm. Like sports is, you know, like with sports, like
the Hollywood is not competitive.
Nah, it's a lot.
Really?
Like, yeah. Yeah. It's.
How is that possible?
Cause like, even when we was in film school, it was like, hey, man, this is competition. And it was cause I came straight from, like, I walked off. Like, my last football season was 2007, and I got accepted to film school. And walked into film school class in spring of 2008. You know what I'm saying? So I was like fresh off the field in the class. And I was like, you're in competition with this person next to you. And it's competition for that. And then you get into it. It's like, man, it's not a competition. Like, nobody trying to stop me from making the movie I want to make. And nobody's, if I'm honest, making some honest to myself, nobody's going to make this. Like in football, like when I go out on the field and I'm trying to catch a touchdown, it's another person standing there whose job it is to stop me from doing that. You know what I mean? Like
nobody's doing that here.
Nah. You know, like, you know, fight against like time or trying to find money.
Because like, you and I you know, push back on you because I feel like the reason you have that luxury is because you have locked into, it's like a thing that only you could do, right? It's like you locked into the truth of what your strengths are. Not everybody gets to that point. So people are in a pool of like, oh, there's five directors that could do this job.
Yeah. I mean that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
When you have situations where it's more people working than there are jobs to go around.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't take away that competitiveness to get the open job like that. You know, that's like the labor market though, right? You know what I'm saying? I'm saying it more in terms of like.
Somebody's trying to cut you at the knees.
Yeah, like, as filmmakers, I don't know how much of that exists.
Do you think maybe that's because that's how you operate? versus that's how Hollywood operates?
It's possible.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible.
It's very possible.
Everybody a prisoner of their own perspective.
That's
you know?
True.
Ooh. But I don't know, man. I don't know if it's directors out there saying, man, fuck this director. Man, I don't hire this person.
For
you know what I'm saying? Like,
somebody's saying, fuck Ryan today. today.
Maybe. You know
but
what
they stuck
saying?
In that. They're a prisoner of that. Yeah. They're going to be a prisoner of that right there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know.
I was going to ask you about, because you were saying about competitiveness and stuff like that. You have had success, like a lot of success. Like your films have been commercially successful. Mm. How important is that to you?
That's such a great question.
Mm.
In the 1980s, Frank Farian was riding high as a successful German music producer, but he was bored.
German pop was formulaic, dull, and oh so white. Frank had bigger dreams, American dreams. He wanted to create the kind of music that would rival larger-than-life artists like Michael Jackson or Run DMC.
So he assembled a hip-hop duo, two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? One very important element was missing, but Frank knew just how to fix that.
Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's biggest controversies. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when their adoring fans learned about the infamous lip-syncing, their downfall was swift and brutal. With exclusive interviews from frontman Fab Morvan and his producers Frank Farian and Ingrid Segee, this podcast takes a fresh look at the exploitation of two young Black artists.
Follow Blame It on the Fame wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Very important.
Mm.
You don't have any control over that, you know. But it's super important. And it's important, like, in a few different ways. Like, for me, I grew up loving movies, not knowing that I would eventually, like, discover a passion for making them. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I loved movies. My family loved movies. That was what we would do, was go to the movies. We would tell jokes from movies and talk about, like, it's just like this movie, it's just like that movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Got that from my mom more than anything, but also my father. And we didn't grow up on art house movies. You know, like, it was, we in the Bay Area, that was art house theaters, you know what I'm saying? But that wasn't what we was going to multiplexes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, we were watching the big movies.
Yeah, so when I get the opportunity to make a movie that's going all over the place, being like mass distributed, you know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm connecting with that version of myself. You know what I'm saying? Like I got the opportunity to put something out there that's enjoyable for like the kid me. You know what I'm you know what I mean? Like
I love that.
The other part of it is, you know, my job is kind of like bowling, right? You know what I'm saying? Like if you have success, you know what I mean? Like people will let you
pins it down.
People will let you rock again. You know what I mean? If you don't. Maybe your opportunities dry up. So there is that anxiety of like, I think we all have, you know, is when you work in entertainment, it's like, all right, boom, this one worked. Okay, cool. Now let me do another one. You know what I'm saying? Right. They being the powers that be, cause you can't, you know, making movies is very expensive. It's not like I'm at the point where I could just do it on my own. You know what I'm saying? Somebody gotta fund it, right? So there's that aspect too, where it's like, okay, this job being successful enables me to get another one, you know? So those are the reasons why it matters to me. And then the other piece of it is changing, you know, cause it's becoming more of us, you know, filmmakers that look like you, look like me, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's a product of us being a minority that doesn't have a ton of capital power, that oftentimes we judge by what one of us does. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Even if that's not what's actually happening, it's something that can be internalized. You know what I'm saying? So like, there's also the added pressure of like, I hope this works. So the next time, you know, Gina makes something or Steven makes something or Mike B makes something, they can point to what we did on this, mm-hmm. and they can get their stuff made. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Of course it does.
That's the
pressure though. There's also pressure in that, which is totally. What I wonder for somebody like you. Even we talk about Fruitville being 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You went from that, which I'm sure there was pressure.
Always.
Because what was the budget? Was it a big budget, medium budget in your world?
It was big
for you.
It was big for me at the time. Yeah. It was right around $1 million. Like it was.
You did that movie for $1 million?
Yeah, I think it was probably a little less. Yeah.
We have a script. We're trying to figure out how much millions it could be. So every time somebody says they made a film.
How much y'all need your
script? Yeah.
How much y'all need to make your script?
Yeah, yeah. No, we have a script. We have how much to make the movie.
Yeah, yeah. How much y'all need to make it?
Yeah, we always figure out. So when I hear stories of that, it's very exciting.
You give it to a line producer?
Not yet, but that's the next step.
Yeah, yeah. and that money bought us 20 days.
You shot in 20 days.
Yeah.
Okay, but so you go from that, then you go to Creed.
Yeah. Yeah, Creed was the next film I wrote. Co-wrote that one with Aaron Covington.
But you go from that to Creed to Black Panther, and these are big budget movies. Not just budget, but it's just the expectation behind it and the level of just the pressure.
Yep.
It's a different level of pressure.
Yep.
How do you manage that? How do you show up, be creative, not, how do you block out that? Because everybody, whether they are a filmmaker or they're whatever there is, if you're good at it and you're growing, there'll be a point where you're shit.
Totally.
It's pressure.
Yeah. I was there from day one. Like from the moment I showed up in film school, you know, because like film school, I think I left out of there $200,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. And I was on a full scholarship in undergrad playing football. So like, so I had never had debt before. You know what I mean? Like, so every day in school, I'm thinking like, man, this place is expensive. I gotta do my thing. What if this movie sucks? And this is my shorts, right? What if this movie sucks? And the professor say, man, get out of here, man. Go back home to the Bay, you know? When Fruitville, you know, got greenlit by the great Forrest Whitaker and Nina Yang Bon Jovi, I was terrified to let them down. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Terrified. And it was more money than, you know, I didn't know. It's like, Jesus, $1 million. Oh my God. You know what I'm saying? Like I didn't want to, you know, lose that money for the investors. You know?
So the same pressure from then to Black Panther is the same amount of pressure?
It's from the outside looking in, there's clearly like more at stake, but the stress level you know, is at the maximum. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? On each on each one, if that makes sense.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like it feels like I'm as stressed as I could be.
Do you have a trick or a thing that you do or that you tell yourself? Is there when that starts creeping in?
I try to remind myself to control what I can control. It's a collaborative medium. So I try to hire the best people that I can. I got an amazing wife who's been with me, known me a long time, and is always very honest with me. Is very smart. So I keep her around and let her in on everything I'm doing, you know, so she can kind of give me perspective.
Mm-hmm.
For when I'm drowning in stress, she can tell me, yeah, you should be worried or not, you tripping, you know what I'm saying? I let people work to the max of their capacity. So if I got a co-writer or if I got cinematographer, AD, you know, let them take as much off of my plate as they can. And then sadly, because I deal with work addiction, I try to work myself into the place of being comfortable with what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if that makes sense.
Well, two things I want to know. Talk to me about work addiction, because I completely understand.
Yeah.
And I'm doing my best in this part. And this time, it took me to this time in my life to try at least. I have some tools that I use, but it's still a struggle.
I mean, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, like.
But I've never really heard somebody just own it and claim it like that.
Yeah.
Like work addiction.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a self-diagnosis, right? But like I kind of discovered it when I was going through something really emotionally intense, actively. I won't disclose what it was. And I realized that I was unconsciously working.
Mm.
Like I was working at a time and I really shouldn't have been working. I should have been dealing with what was happening.
Trauma?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should have been dealing with what was happening. And I kind of got called out on it. Like, yo, why are you sending emails and making calls about this thing when we got this going on? You know, and that was when I realized, like, oh, I got a problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so I navigated, you know what I'm saying? But it's a lot like somebody who got an eating disorder, right? Because you have to work, you know what I mean, and live, you know what I mean? Like, you got to eat to live. So when you're dealing with things that's like necessities, it gets tricky.
But you also love it, too.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and it brings good things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's complicated, you know, like... But it can also ruin your life. You can lose the things that's most important, right? You know what I mean? Like, so I monitor it. You know what I'm saying? But like, yeah, like if I'm feeling, the tricky part is like if I'm stressed about a scene, right? It's often because I haven't given it enough time. You know, like so what I kind of have to do to make myself less stressed is to work on it. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yes.
So then I got to negotiate, right? It's like, all right, I'm going to sleep tonight. You know, where am I going to work this scene to the point that it feels like it's doing what it's supposed to do?
But it's also that it's not healthy.
So should I show up to work tomorrow for this 10-hour day that might end up being 14 or 16? Should I show up with a good night's sleep, but the work unfinished? You know what I'm saying? And we work out on the day. Or should I show up completely sleep deprived, but I know the work is there. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, in some days, like, I look at what actors am I working with. You know what I mean? Are they good to work with on the spot?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to get freaked out if it's not done? Are they going to show up panicked? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, this scene ain't working. Cool. Yeah. What are we going to do? Like if I got the ones that's going to be cool with working on the day, I'm not going to sleep. You know what I'm saying?
Are you getting better at that? Going to sleep?
Yeah, I can navigate it a little better. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I first started, like, Refruitvil, I just didn't sleep. You know, 20 days. But on Creed was 50 days. Panther was close to 100. So I can't not sleep for 100 days. You see where I'm coming from?
No, you got to sleep.
Yeah.
You know what's helped me? And that's because I have work addiction too. But I don't know. I've really locked into like, just locking into like the faith of it all and waiting for, just have the faith. It's just the faith.
Yeah.
Do as much as I can and then have faith that whatever it's supposed to be, it's going to be,
yeah.
Which I used to say it, but the actual
actively. Like, I'm gonna rest. I'm gonna let it actively
you know? Going. I want to stay up till 5 a.m. because this should be in love. I can't. So I'm gonna go to sleep because I can't. I'm gonna do it. Or something falls flat. I have to have faith that was supposed to fall flat.
Yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I've been finding, it's only been a few years that I've been actively living that way. There's really something to it. It's
beautiful.
There's really something to that.
No, it's beautiful. Because
you get the peace and the comfort, and then you also sometimes it comes out better than you, if you were micromanaging and trying to control it so much.
Yeah.
It comes better because the magic in the recreating or whatever it is, fixing something that broke is the, you miss that magic if you over controlling everything.
Totally. No, you're so right.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure, right.
It's a process.
Yeah.
It's all a process.
Yeah.
But the other thing that you said before that I was like, oh, I got a question about that is just your wife and her support of you and the importance of choosing the right partner in your life. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, super important. Like, you know.
Did you know that? But you grew up in not many of my guests have, we were talking about this before because we always talk about daddy issues or things like this. And it's because most people don't have two parent households.
Yeah.
You
can have a two-parent household and still have daddy issues.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I mean, yeah, my parents was both in my life. They still are.
Yeah. But did they teach you the importance of picking the right partner, or did you get that young, or you just happen to luck up? Like, was it intentional?
Yes, it's a complicated question.
Mm. It's okay.
Nah, it's fine. I'm just trying to think about how to answer. I mean, when my pop would say this, my pop actually would say this. He'll say, "Man, I'm from the Bay Area. We got a lot of phrases and sayings and like slick." But he'll say, "More is caught than taught." What that means is like you can sit down and teach somebody something, but if they're around you every day, they're gonna catch what you do.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So my parents. You know, I was around them all the time, you know, and picked up a lot of things from them, just from them being around. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like they sat down and was like, "Hey, man, when you pick your mate, you got to pick the right person." They never said.
They didn't write the list of things.
Nah, you know. But I watched how they got down. You know what I'm saying? And maybe it was. I never did this kind of self analysis. Man, it's almost like going to therapy or something.
I know people say that to me all the time.
I haven't really done therapy much, but what is true though? What is true, you know, is that my parents met when they were kids.
Mm.
That's the reality.
Yeah, you guys met young. College?
Yeah. High school.
High school.
I met her when I was...
Kids in high school.
Yeah, I met her when I was 13.
Whoa, wow.
Yeah, so like, it's probably something to me as a kid when I was like, man, I might meet the one. You know what I'm saying?
You didn't even know you was looking.
Moving. Yeah.
At 13, you didn't even know you was looking for her.
How I was moving. You feel me? Just because I knew that's how I worked out with my parents or whatever. You feel me?
That's dope.
But, yeah, it's
well,
weird.
You did good.
Yeah, I lucked out. I lucked out. Man, I definitely lucked out.
Since we're talking about family, though I wonder how much being a father has changed you. Or what have you learned from that?
Yeah.
It's probably kicked into why you're aware of your work addiction. I'm sure that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally a part of it.
Yeah.
I was on vacation once and a waiter asked me and Zinzi if we had kids. We said nah. And he was like, man, just wait. He's like, I just had a kid. The waiter, he said, and it's like everything before the kid was black and white, and now everything's in color.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's like the best description of it. You feel like I've and it's no disrespect to people who not capable or looking for having kids. You know what I'm saying? Like it's no disrespect, but for me personally,
in your life,
it felt like everything leading up to this was practice. And now the game started. You know, that makes sense.
It totally does.
Yeah, it's that kind of feeling.
It totally.
But
does.
But it also is crazy because like the things nobody tells you. Actually, you know what? Somebody did tell me this. It was real. It was a little real.
Mm.
He told me while he was working on Judas and the Black Messiah.
Mm.
But he was like, yo, there's nothing more entertaining than your own kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just so entertaining. And that's the other thing. Like, I watch less movies and TV and everything because they just so interesting. You know what I mean? It's so constantly exciting and like nerve wracking. You know what I'm saying? And like that it, you know, everything else is kind of like. Everything else kind of like pales in comparison. You know what I'm saying? Like you get more adrenaline from like them running around the kitchen in their socks. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Cause like every step they might, you know what I mean? It's more than that than
an action movie.
Than anything. You know what I'm saying? So like,
that's funny.
Yeah. So like you kind of like I wasn't ready to be like kind of like perpetually like unimpressed by everything else, you know what I'm saying?
That's funny.
Yeah, but yeah, it's wild, man.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, you definitely get like more aware of your mortality too. That's the other.
Oh my gosh, for sure.
Yeah,
I was telling you this earlier. That's how this podcast started. My first chapter was called "We're All Gonna Die," because it's like when you start to become aware of your mortality. To me, it could do one of two things. You could get freaked out or scared by it, or depressed or sad.
Yeah.
Or you could be inspired by that and realize the time, how important time is and how important our choices are and what we're doing with our time here. And
it's crazy because like where I'm from and the time coming up in the time that I came up in, we was surrounded by the concept of like young death and like old death. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a thing. Like it was known like, it was in our movies, but it was also started to happen to us. Like, oh yeah, I could get shot. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could get smoked. Like high school, college age. That was like the fear. Like, I'm gonna go to a party, man. Something might happen. I might get smoked. You know what I'm saying? Like, we might get caught with something. I gotta go away for forever or whatever. You know what I mean? But what I kind of wasn't prepared for was like late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh wow, like what's this gonna look like? And now it's getting crazy, like late 30s, because I'm seeing like family, I'm seeing like the changing of the guard with the family. Like I'm seeing like my parents' age become the oldest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, oh shit, we next up. You know what I mean? Like,
it's so funny. I had Joe Button on. We had Joe Button on, and we were talking about the elevator of life.
Yeah,
it's like an elevator. So who? It's like they go, and then it's like, what's you're becoming the dad, and and you'll be the grandfather.
Yeah, and like strangely, we was prepared for like an exit on the third floor, right?
Yeah,
like teenage, young 20s, but like now
fifth floor.
Yeah, the fifth floor, the sixth floor. It was kind of like kind of unknown. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it brings like a strange thing. Like I remember when Kobe passed away, my wife and I had just met him. We just met him and Vanessa, you know, and Vanessa was pregnant and Zinzi was pregnant. You know what I'm saying? Like it was both like, I think she was more pregnant than Zinzi was, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, chopping it up with Kobe and I remember just how big he was, you know what I'm saying? Like he was just so like so imposing, you know what I mean? And chopping it up and everything, and you know, we back home, we find out about the accident, and we devastated, and Zen's thinking about, you know, the young kid that was pregnant with, you know, and her maybe not having a chance to have, you know, a relationship with him that in the physical sense that she remembered, and then we realized it was like, oh wait, what if something happened to us?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, like you know what I mean. We didn't have a trust. We didn't have a will. We didn't have any of our stuff
lined up in order.
And like we didn't even know how to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, because we from a place where people don't have those things. You know,
really?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, it was bananas. You know what I mean? It was like, and we, you know, we had a kid, and it's like, man, oh my god, we gotta get on our shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so I called Charles King, and was like, bro, we gotta get.
I'm acting surprised, but I'm not surprised. I was very, not that, it was not that long ago that I finally got all that stuff in order too.
Yeah.
But you called Charles?
Called Charles immediately.
Yeah.
And he helped us get everything straight, squared away. But shit, for everybody listening, man, get that shit taken care of.
No, that's for real.
You know?
And you've had a string of loss in the past couple of years. How have you,
yeah.
I don't know, how has that shaped you? Just because it's like confronting mortality, but also there's grief, right? Yeah. And sadness that comes with that. How have you managed through that?
I mean, I carry it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, this the director of Underrated, this is a little girl. Mm. We lost her in 2019.
And Chadwick is on the other one?
Chad, yeah. But you know, you...
By the way, the chain is fire. Is that black?
Black diamonds, yeah.
Of course it's black diamonds. Yeah, that's fire. Him, yeah. Yeah, that's fire.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, he didn't really wear it.
He wasn't a jewelry guy, right?
He would wear like African bracelets. He wouldn't wear gemstones, nothing like that. You know what I mean? It would be like bespoke stuff. He got me this copper bracelet. We wrapped the first Panther, and I didn't even want to take no gift from him. You know what I'm saying? Cause he gave me the greatest gift with that performance. You know what I'm saying? Just friendship. I'll never forgive myself for this, man. I took it home and put it like in a box somewhere. And we moved. I still got it, but it's in storage. I gotta go find it.
Please go find it immediately.
Yeah, I will, man. Mm. But I meant it though. I didn't need nothing material from him, but I didn't know we was gonna lose him so soon. You know what I'm saying? So I got this one made, but I got it blacked off for him because I know he'd be like, I don't put no diamonds in that, man. You know what I'm saying? So I got the black ones. But sure, you carry it, man. You know, and it's something you learn how to move with, man. Like, you know, but yeah, a lot of loss.
John.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Singleton. Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of loss, man. But everybody deals with it.
It's a circle of life. It is.
It's such a part of life. You know, it's gonna happen to all of us. In learning how to navigate it. And learning how to like acknowledge it and get through it in your own way is like a necessary part of life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But it don't make it easy.
Nah, never easy. Yeah. But it should inspire you to, like, we always say it when somebody first passes, like, oh, you got to live for the moment, life's short. You say all those things.
Yeah.
But to actually live a life like that.
Yeah.
Intentionally all the time.
Yeah.
It's like a gift. I think from having experienced something like that.
Yeah. And also being close to Chad, man. Mm-hmm. Like he was so like in the time that I knew him, he was sick. You know, I didn't know until after he passed. But he was so intentional, like so present.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was just who he was or what he was dealing with or had a combination of both.
Yeah, it had to be,
you know.
Also, yeah.
But both. Yeah, he was a great teacher at that. Mm-hmm. Me.
You know, but how so? Give us a lesson in that, or like one.
It's like back to what I was saying with my pops. Like more is caught than taught. He never sat me down and said, "Hey, cool, this is how you gotta live your life." Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And Chad was older than me, and he totally could have. I would have listened. You know what I'm saying? Like like if he would have been like, "Hey, man, let me tell you something, young man." For me, but he didn't. It was just how he worked. You know, like he would. He rarely had his phone with him when we would be working. He would you know, I'd give him direction. He would stop. He would look me right in the eye. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know,
I'm right here.
Yeah.
We're right here.
Yeah. And if to think about something, he would take deep breaths, you know, like, he moved at his own pace. I've never seen him rush, but he was like always on time. One of them kind of people, you know, like, and he couldn't be hurried neither, you know what I'm saying?
He couldn't be hurried? Nah. That probably drove you crazy as a director.
I mean, that AD Moore, you know what I'm saying? Cause like, for me, I was like, okay, yeah, he a king on set. So like, you know, I get it. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like he was gonna move on his own pace. And then you realize what he was dealing with, you know, and what he was doing it for. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, you know, so you lose somebody like that, and you go back and replay, you know, everything, and you realize, man, that was, you know, I realized for me, he was showing me a lot, you know.
Mm. Yeah. What a great lesson.
Yeah.
Nah, what a great thing for you to have.
It's a dope video of him, man, like giving the Howard commencement speech. And if you're watching the video, they put the graduating, like, tassel on him, and he does the thing I'm talking about. He takes, like, a deep breath and it acknowledges like what just happened. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And it's something that like not a lot of people do.
Ooh, I'm stealing that today.
Yeah.
I feel like every episode there's something I take away, couple of things I take away. There's a few things you said today I'm definitely taking with
right
me.
On.
But I'm taking that too from Chad. Yeah. I'm taking that from Chad.
I definitely stole it from you, man. Like if the kid do something crazy or if somebody say something kind or if I gotta like make a decision, I'll literally like pull a Chad. Like I'll just like think about it for a bit. You know what I'm saying? Register it and then move. But yeah, if you want to see him do it live, check that commencement, man. Because he does.
I'm going to roll back on
you
that.
You can tell like how much it meant to him.
That's beautiful.
You know.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I would imagine you're in a position you could probably, there's probably projects being thrown at you 100 a day.
I mean, me, Zinzi, and Sev Ohanian, we started a company called Proximity Media.
Mm-hmm.
We started it in 2018. We did Space Jam and Judas right away, Judas and Black Messiah. And then, We started to expand, got into, you know, podcasts like we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. We got a podcast called In Proximity.
Mm-hmm.
That's really fun. But we started to expand and hire people that are really good at doing certain things. Pete Nix, who directed Underrated, also directed Anthem for us. It's on Hulu, but he runs Nonfiction, you know? And like now that we have executives and staff, yeah, we're able to like to look at more projects that might come in.
This is how the Steph project came.
Yeah, Eric Payton, who founded Unanimous Media with Stephen Curry, called with the idea, and they had worked out quite a bit. And I love the idea. But I'm from the Bay Area, big Warriors fan, love Steph, and ended up making like a beautiful movie.
Yeah,
about like
it's like the
power of, it's totally, but also about like the power of being seen. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like. So often, you know, people, especially like in business or but with sports especially, people oftentimes look at a player and they see what's not there as opposed to what's there.
Yeah, you know? When they were reading off his NBA, his draft, what is that called? His draft bio. That was wild.
Yeah. A lot of people got it wrong.
Of course they got it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how the world is.
People who did, who got it right.
That's how the world is. Everybody, yeah. Anytime you're trying to do something that's like groundbreaking, is going to be people that don't see you.
Yeah.
And he, for some reason, didn't listen to any of that.
Well, yeah, he had people who saw him, you know, and people who gave him a chance, believed in him, built him up, and was great about Steph and was great about the movie is he gives back to those people. You know, it's like, he's not just taking. Like, you know, he told his mom he was going to graduate and went and did it. You know, you know what I'm saying? And wanted his jersey up there, at Davidson so he could give back to his coach, you know, who gave so much to him. So I think that Pete made a beautiful movie, man. It's a beautiful movie.
That's dope. Okay. You know what? I usually start my interviews this today, and we didn't do it today. I usually start the interview with how happy are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Right now?
Right now.
Like a 9.5.
Really?
Yeah.
God bless.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So. Yeah, like a 9.5.
Based on just life or?
I mean, right now in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that for you.
Think so.
That's great. I mean,
Angie Martinez, I'm in New York. Got health insurance. Yeah, fall straight, you know? Yeah.
What in real life, what are you most proud of?
Wow. Holy shit.
Sorry, I know it's not super light. It could be light for some people. You're a thinker. You like to.
Yeah, and I want to ask you honestly.
Mm.
Man, what is pride? Like, what is that?
Something that you feel makes you feel good about you, I think. And for me, I would say I'm proud that I always get back up. My longevity, not just career, fuck career, but my career, probably like yours, meshes into my real life.
Yeah. Right.
You know totally, what I'm saying?
Totally.
So it all is
no
combined.
Separation.
There's really no separation.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids and my family, but for me, for you personally, like, I don't know. Is it a career moment? Is it a project? Is it a something about your projects that you're most proud of? Or
Oh,
I love how thoughtful you are.
I think it's probably it's a lot, man. I think it's probably in 2018 was going through a lot, but I got to take my wife, my mom, and my grandmother, who was in her 90s, to the continent for the first time. Mm. It was all three of their first time.
Beautiful.
And I got them there, got them back safe.
Mm.
So I think that's probably the biggest deal. And why it was a big deal is because, like, I grew up hearing about Africa from people who had never been, you know what I'm saying? Due to, like, what happened to our ancestors, you know? So, like, taking the eldest member of my family there was probably a big deal. So
it was probably a proud moment.
So maybe. But there's so many. I've been blessed. Like, for real. Mm. That's one, I guess, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing, and we're going to let you go. It's really a two-part, so it's up to you how quick or short you want to make it.
Yeah.
But, what do you want people to learn from to learn from your life?
Fuck. You ask cold questions.
I'm sorry. It's supposed to be a speed round.
So,
And then what's left? Yeah. What is the star for you?
I guess, what I want people to learn from my life is that there's power in finding out what you love. Mm. You know what I'm saying? In doing it. Like I found what I loved in a roundabout way, you know? But I thank God I was, like, open to it, you know, as an option, you know, when it was presented to me.
You could have easily been
totally
on a one way. Totally. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It would have been very easy for me. What happened with me was a teacher recommended it in a class that was not a filmmaking class. It was a creative writing class that I wasn't really aiming my life towards. And she read something I wrote. It was like, hey, you should write screenplays. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of what led me on this. So I'm thankful that I was listening. I'm thankful for that teacher. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, probably, like, the power of community, I think, more than anything, is what I hope people take from it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a product of the people who saw me and spoke confidence to me and supported me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And what's next, you said?
Yeah. And what do you have left? Like, what's the North Star for you?
Truthfully, the North Star for me is to like, I'm trying to, like, live a long time. You know what I'm saying? Like, and be productive and conscious, present, and kind, I think. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
good.
That's what I'm trying to do. You feel
conscious,
me?
Conscious, like, present, and kind.
Yeah. But, like, take care of myself along the way because.
To yourself as well, right? Kind to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Like you know, because I got a lot of, you know, I've seen a lot of people check out early. You know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to maximize the time and work consistently, but not like in a way that's crazy, you know what I'm saying?
Not like an addict.
Yeah. Have a healthy relationship with the grind.
Well, yeah. When you decide to work, we'll be here to receive it.
Right on.
We appreciate you so much.
Right
man.
On.
Thank you for today.
This was fun. Thanks for
inviting
me.
Thank you. Of course.
So
anytime.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Everybody, Ryan Coogler.
Ryan Coogler. Our first filmmaker in real life.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Delve into the visceral world of hip-hop with the Gangsta Chronicles, hosted by MC8 and Big Steel. It's every Thursday,
I already know.
A podcast that aims to unravel the intricate tapestry of one of music's most influential and misunderstood subgenres, gangsta rap.
Let's go.
Gangsta Chronicles unpacks the evolution of this uniquely American art form, offering listeners a comprehensive understanding of the significance this genre holds. Listen to the Gangsta Chronicles on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.